You have your mother's eyes.
Gomez, take those out of his mouth.
Lights, camera, action. Welcome back to another episode of Happy Hour Films. As you all know, I am Ross Bacon. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Mike McGuigan. Mike, say hi.
How is everyone doing?
And tonight we are joined by, now this is a monumental night, people. We are joined by our second female guest ever, and it is Mike's friend, Taylor. How you doing, Taylor?
Hi, how are you?
Yeah, it's good to have you on. My wife has wanted some company in the female listener slash guest category.
I'm an avid movie fan, so you asked the right person.
Perfect. And apparently you are a very avid Harry Potter fan as well, so that will come in very handy when we talk about the final two movies and or one movie, two parts for Harry Potter month. And that is, of course, the Deathly Hallows Part 1 and 2.
Yeah, calling Deathly Hallows Part 1 a movie is really a stretch.
Well, I feel like The Lord of the Rings is going to have some copyright issues with it, but we'll get to it. So that said, why don't we get into what we're drinking? So, Taylor, being the guest, why don't you let us know what you're drinking?
Sure. So I have a hard cider, original flavor, from Ship Bottom Brewery.
Yay!
OPI. Also have some hard seltzers because I couldn't decide which one I wanted. But some reason, Harry Potter reminds me of fall. Apple cider reminds me of fall. So we ultimately went with this one first. And
how is it?
It's very good.
Nice.
Tastes like apple juice. Straight up Mott's apple juice. But it's good. I can't complain about it.
It's a good one. I just finished off their like summer mimosa. I had like a six pack of that for a while, and I just finished off the last two of those last night.
As we all know, Ross is the biggest Ship Bottom Brewing fan.
Damn right.
You're showing me your mug.
Been going there since they opened up, because my family every year would go down to LBI. And of course, you know, being of legal drinking age when they opened up, I was like, hey, guess where I'm spending an afternoon or so. So that's where I did.
Mimosas. I would have grabbed those.
Well, it's like mimosa hard cider. You know, it's not quite an apple flavored cider, but it's, you know, not quite a hard seltzer.
So I had a pineapple cider the other day, and that was really good.
Nice. Well, what are you drinking tonight, Mike?
Tonight, I am drinking from Death of the Fox Brewing in Clarksboro, Professor Fox's Magical Butter Beer.
There you go.
Wow.
I knew I was going to review this beer whenever we did Harry Potter, and I happened to get a chance to run down to my mom's house, and it's not too far from there.
Not on brand. I don't know what is.
So it's a sweet ale. It's definitely has like tastes like butterscotch vanilla-ish a bit, and it's really good. I really like it. I haven't had a beer from there that I didn't like so far, and it's 6.9%.
Now last week we talked about that Harry Potter and like Disney World or whatever. Did they have butter beer down there? I'm assuming.
Yep.
Universal. They have virgin and non-virgin choices of it.
Have you guys had it?
I have.
Is it any good?
So there's three different kinds, actually. Like, besides the virgin and non-virgin, you could get the frozen, you could get regular, and then you could get warm butter beer. And warm butter beer is easily the best tasting.
I have to agree. I've had the frozen and the warm, both virgin and non-virgin. Warm is better. However, it's a very sweet strength and like strong in the sweet sense. I'm just not a fan of that. So after like maybe like half a cup of it, I'm like, all right, I'm over this.
And then the regular one is literally just cream soda with like, it's like a mix of marshmallow and whipped cream on top.
Interesting.
That's like a headache waiting to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Warm butter beer is sort of, it's almost like a, instead of hot chocolate, like a hot vanilla and butterscotch.
Okay.
Yeah,
the whole thing sounds like it's, you know, a dentist dream. You know, just waiting to fill those cavities.
And then the frozen butter beer is basically just like a 7-Eleven slushy of cream soda.
Slurpee, man. Slurpee.
Slurpee.
It's a branded name. Get it right. But, all right, so you guys got your butter beer and your ciders. But me, on the other hand, I went with Spellbound Brewing, which I don't know how that ties into Harry Potter. I don't know at all.
Yeah, it doesn't seem on brand.
It's off. But it's also, it's called Enlightened. It's an India Pale Ale, and it's 3.5%. Like, that's part of the reason why I grabbed it. I was like, I want to see what an IPA with barely any alcohol in it tastes.
Does that even count as beer?
It does, yeah. It's got alcohol in it. I mean, it's basically a Miller Lite. Like, Miller Lite's only got like 4 in it. But it's good. It's very flavorful and tasty. And it's, like I said, it's kind of like a Miller Lite. It's a little bit better than that. But it's I got it in my new ceramic ship-bottom mug. So
that only fits 12 ounces and not 16.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure the website said 16. But either way, I mean, it fits a full 12, so that's fine. It won't fit a full tall boy of ship-bottom in it, but whatever. It doesn't really matter for me tonight. So now that we have that out of the way, why don't we get into the biggest cash grab in movie history?
I think Mockingjay Part 1 and Breaking Dawn Part 1 are both bigger cash grabs in this movie.
Damn it, Mike. I told you. We're not talking about Twilight, all right? We're not talking about Twilight.
Twilight's a whole other disaster in itself that we just cannot form.
Exactly. But, all right, so let's get into Harry Potter and the Lord of the Rings. I mean, Harry Potter and Deathly Hallows Part 1.
Do we have to?
Yeah, we do. We decided at the beginning we would do all of them, so we got to do all of them, Mike. So I guess guests first. Taylor, why don't you tell us about your experiences with Harry Potter in general, because it's your first time on the show. And then why don't you give us a little bit of a breakdown of your feelings about this movie in general?
Yeah, so as I was saying to you earlier, I grew up on Harry Potter. That was basically like the moment I opened my eyes, it was just instilled upon me. You are going to be a Potterhead. Instead of reading children's books, my parents read me chapters of Harry Potter to sleep each night. I grew up, since being born, going to every single book release, going to every single midnight showing, being there right smack in the center of that theater. Even became so nerdy to the point I dressed up for some of these movie showings, so rolled to AMC in a full Hermione Granger gear and hair absolutely puffed to the nines.
even though the movies quit doing that after the second one.
Yeah, they quit after the second one, but I showed up my 14-year-old self, not even like a little kid, having my mom tease the hell out of my hair, rolling up to the movie theater. But I absolutely loved those movies. I adored every movie. Order of the Phoenix got me a little bit, but that's different. Deathly Hallows Part 1 came out. Honestly, at the time, I loved it, but I was 14 years old. I was just ecstatic that, you know, I'm staying awake for a midnight showing. This is Harry Potter. I'm great. And then getting older, reading the books more, and Universal, and just getting a lot more in depth in the movies, it's just trash. It's absolute trash compared to the book. To even lead into the second movie, it was a waste of a movie, a waste. And they left out so much and could have done so much more with this movie. It was almost like a 2.5-hour snooze fest.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. This movie's hard to watch.
I watched it with, like I said, I was watching it the other day on E. They were having their typical Harry Potter marathon.
Oh, so you had to watch it with commercials too.
Oh, with so this became a 4-hour movie.
I was gonna say, it's like 6 hours.
Yeah, it was
with
awful.
Commercials for the Kardashians. Ugh.
Exactly. So we started, it was me and my grandpa. We started at, I think it was Goblet of Fire. Warning of, we just had nothing else to do. He was awake all of Goblet of Fire, awake all of Order of the Phoenix, awake all the Half-Blood Prince, Deathly Hallows Part 1 comes out. Just right. Out like a light. Then Deathly Hallows Part 2 comes 15 minutes in. He's like, whoa. I'm like, if this doesn't say something that I've kept my 70-something-year-old grandfather awake for the last almost 8 hours on different movies, and then Deathly Hallows comes on, and he's just out.
No, it's kind of impressive he stayed awake through Half-Blood Prince, because that's almost as much teen drama as this movie.
Half-Blood Prince more is better, though. This movie, not even just the teen drama aspect, this movie just, like, dragged on. Like, I get there's a whole lot more in-depth storyline, obviously, to Harry Potter. It's also a sci-fi action movie. You want to see some action going on there. And when you think of the action parts, you have maybe 2 scenes that lasted a solid 3 to 5 minutes each total in a 2.5-hour movie.
The rest first 10 has minutes, Ron last
whining,
10 minutes.
Hermione whining, Harry whining. It's the whole movie. It's all 3 of them just whining around, running, finding the Horcruxes.
Well, what it is it's Lord of the Rings, because the Horcrux is making everything.
Don't you fucking dare compare this movie to Lord of the Rings.
Well, that's what it is. It's the same goddamn story. They're walking through the woods and a little piece of jewelry is pissing them off. It's the same exact thing as Lord of the Rings.
I can't disagree with that one. I mean, logically, it is like a very similar storyline.
But Lord of the Rings is a goddamn masterpiece. This movie's trash.
Well, yeah, movie very much is trash. I will give you that. But it's most likely trash because it really does feel like at certain points, it's one of those situations where like during a cash grab movie, you just want the characters to look at you and be like, are you happy with this? Is this how you want to spend your time? It's like, we're getting paid. What are you doing? You know,
well, even that 22 years later and after, like I said, growing up, reading these books, watching these films, going to everything, I still sit there and watch some of these movies and like just get utter goosebumps at like some of the scenes. I'm like, this is art. Like, this is absolute masterpiece. I watch Deathly Hallows. I'm like, it's kind of like when they brought in the directors the last season of Game of Thrones. I'm like, what?
Except that instead of shortening the last two seasons incredibly, they just drew this out as long as they could.
But it's like of every, like, think of like the Battle of Hogwarts, like how much you could have even extended that in part two and like the amount of things they could have added to that and even the characters they left out of that and those scenes. And it's like, you want to extend this one of like all the aspects of Harry Potter.
At least we get Maggie Smith in the second one. She's golden.
Well, speaking of Game of Thrones, in this one, we have Catelyn Stark as Hermione's mom. And because I'm watching this and like Hermione's, you know, neuralizing her parents. And I was like, oh, wait, that's Catelyn Stark. Holy shit. You know, and I'm thinking, it was like, she would have just started, I think, Game of Thrones. Because I think that starts in like 2011 or something.
2011, yeah.
Yeah, so she would have just been starting her her other big franchise. She's ending this franchise and coming up in the next big one. But of course, we also get Domhnall Gleeson as the eldest Weasley son, right? Mm-hmm.
They did a whole article, I remember on Facebook, I think I sent it to you, Mike, at some point. It was like a year ago. I remember they did like a whole listing of like every Game of Thrones Harry Potter crossover with like
each
character. And it was like, you not even realizing, because obviously something like Hermione's mom, Catelyn Stark, is like so minor that it takes a moment. You're like, wait a second, like pin the 30-second scene together. You're like, oh yeah.
I think one of my biggest
in the two.
My biggest oh shit moment was when David O'Hara shows up. You might know him as Mr. X from Wanted or Fitzy from the Departed.
Oh, right.
not the Departed, the Departed.
The Departed, that's the proper pronunciation. But of course, obviously, since we've been talking about it these last couple weeks, this is the greatest hits of British actors. And of course, one of the biggest ones finally shows up in this movie, and it's Bill Nye.
Yeah.
How they only slipped him in for this one tiny role, I'll never know, because he very much should have been, you know, a Snape type character in this universe.
Yeah, this movie is just hollow. You get your first 10 minutes, it's pretty, I like the Battle of the Five Potters a lot.
Is it a Deathly Hallow?
I hate you.
You said it.
I don't even want to finish my thought after that.
Yeah, you shouldn't. But no, the multiplicity with Harry Potter at the beginning of this movie is pretty interesting, especially when they ice Hedwig for no reason.
No, that still, it's kind of like a Dobby, well, the first original Dobby passing. That one just really struck me. I'm like, come on. The poor owl did so much through all these seven movies, and we gotta kick him out right away.
How
do you kill off Brendan Gleeson off screen? How does Mad-Eye Moody get how does he get a goddamn off screen death?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Even it took me, because again, a few weeks ago, I haven't seen Deathly Hallows Part 1 in probably years at that point, because I avoid that movie at all costs. But it took me a moment to remember that. Even my grandpa asked me, like, oh, what happened to Mad-Eye? And I'm like, they killed him off screen. I forgot about that. You have such a prominent character throughout the movies, and he's just gone. And, like, literally one sentence, he's just gone.
Also, in the books, it's explained that the reason they targeted Mad-Eye is he was the strongest wizard escorting one of the Potters, so they assumed that Harry would be with him, and Voldemort kills him.
Yeah.
Which we find out Voldemort's greatest weakness is power lines in this movie.
Yeah, apparently.
Yeah. He's caught in the fucking power lines.
Yeah, good thing they don't have those at Hogwarts.
Yeah. But something like that, imagine just filming that scene. I don't know if I could take Harry Potter seriously after that, though.
Yeah. It's a shame Professor Liam Neeson never showed up.
Dude, he would have taken care of transporting Harry from point to point.
Taylor, to fill you in, we've established some headcanon that Liam Neeson has showed up to Hogwarts, and it's just Liam Neeson, and his magic is gun, and he teaches kids how to fight.
He just beats the shit out of students and teachers alike whenever he doesn't get his way or feels like it.
Snape has walked away with many bloody noses.
Right. For like cutting in line in the break room, taking the last cup of coffee, all kinds of stuff. But Professor Liam Neeson would have been a great asset to Hogwarts of Come Part 2.
This sounds like a YouTube parody in the making.
I'm telling you.
Liam Neeson in certain scenes.
I feel like if we pitched this to like Universal or Warner Brothers and Liam Neeson at the same time, we could get this movie made.
Liam Neeson would so be on board for this. He would
absolutely do it. Oh, just to get the chance to kick some kids in the head, I bet.
They can't get him to leave. No one can get Professor Liam Neeson to leave.
It was, how are you going to get him to leave? He's beating your ass the whole time. You can't get him to word in. You can't even try. You're just gonna
Snape has tried several times and he's walked away with bloody noses.
The only one we didn't say try would be Maggie. Maggie Smith didn't try. But I feel like she might be the one that gets him to leave, you know?
Yeah, she eventually could. But because Albus, it has to happen after Dumbledore dies, because he would have just found it too amusing to have Professor Liam Neeson around.
Right. Yeah, that twisted old fuck Dumbledore. Jesus. And then, then of course, and it's the next one, right? Where we get his brother, or is that this one? Yeah, it's the next one.
Yeah, continuing the Game of Thrones casting.
Yeah, and I will save my judgment for that because I had no idea that it was Kieran Hines as Dumbledore's brother. I was like, holy shit, that's him?
So casting of Game of Thrones basically went, all right, let's sit through the Harry Potter movies and let's pick our favorites and call them in and ask them to come join us.
Yep.
Well, yeah. And of course, you know, then there's just some of the great other actors they have. They have Rhys Ifans as Luna's dad. You know, it's such a perfect casting for Luna Lovegood's father, you know?
It's
like, you know, the big wiry Welsh guy, you know?
Yeah.
A little flirty as well.
Luna, we established, is like the best character.
She deserves her own spinoff. They shouldn't have done the Grindelwald crap. They should have just done the Luna Lovegood story and where she's just doing drugs around the wizarding world and, you know, talking to death and all that kind of stuff.
And she has like, yeah, Luna just becomes really good friends with death.
Right.
So this is like how people like get high and watch one of those like ocean movies or like Planet Earth. People don't need anything. They could just trip off a Luna Lovegood spinoff, basically.
Pretty much.
Yeah, she's walking around with her glasses that lets her see like the little creatures that makes your head fuzzy.
There's like magic 3D like
virtual
glasses.
Reality Luna Lovegood edition.
It'd be great. It would be awesome. I would watch it so many times. But like, I mean, and then just in this movie, it's like we have all of the standard. It's almost like a worst of hits of Harry Potter because we have Ron being an asshole again. We have Harry whining again. We have Hermione crying again. And then, of course, we just have the woods, you know, it's all the worst stuff in the Harry Potter universe.
Can we talk about how weird the plan for Hermione, like, erasing her parents' memory is? Like, I get why she did it, but, like, what about people that know that they have a kid?
So, that's what I'm saying. Like, what about their neighbors? And, like, say they're walking into their house one day and they're like, oh, how's Hermione? And they're like, who?
Right.
Like, how do you explain that part of it then? Neighbors are like, oh shit, something happened to the daughter. Now we gotta find this daughter.
Yeah, then they become the focus of an investigation, all because Hermione jumps the gun and just assumes they're gonna lose, you know? And then people are like, Voldemort's gonna come after other people.
But
even that, I understand her erasing their memory to try to protect them from Voldemort and his army. Understand that, but that doesn't stop the fact that Voldemort and his army know who Hermione's parents are.
Right.
Like, they may not know who she is. That doesn't stop them from being like, this is her parents. Doesn't, like, remove the emotional tie that she has to them. They just think that the last 20-something years, they just don't have a daughter and just a bunch of blank picture frames around the house.
But also, like, so she basically did that so that they would have no reason to torture her parents to get information. What about poor Mrs. Whatever living next door that knows about Hermione?
Exactly. That's what
that poor old lady that bakes them a nice little pie in the holidays is fucked because Hermione didn't think it through.
Nope.
It was just irrational. It was right off the bat. Again, I get it, trying to protect her parents, but there's a lot of step B, C, D, E, like, going on here. It's not just her parents remembering her, but whole thing after that. I mean, if you put Bellatrix in the picture, she's not believing shit. Like, yeah. I said, I don't know. I don't have a daughter. You think she's believing them? Like, oh, they don't have a daughter. Leave them be.
Yeah. But if anything, it would almost be better for Voldemort that they don't know who Hermione is, because then he can drag them in front of her. She knows very well who these people are and why they don't know who she is. They have no idea why they're being tortured by this noseless man. And then it's just even worse for Hermione, because it's not like she can do anything about it because she eradicated these people's memory. You know, so now these two innocent people are being tortured and screaming, why is this happening to us? And Hermione's like, you know what? Maybe I should have just left it the way it was, and
it's practice for Catelyn Stark, really.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
She's gonna have her own issues with family coming up. So
again, an understatement.
Exactly.
And enjoy her son's wedding.
But Tywin is a much more effective person at getting shit done than Voldemort ever was.
And where is Charlie Dance in this? Where is Chucky? He's not in. He didn't get the, you know, the call to be one of the evil Death Eaters or something like that.
Nope.
Well, he absolutely could have.
Well, that's I think Charles Dance would be too good at his job. Like, I feel like most of the Death Eaters are kind of bumbling idiots. You bring Charles Dance in, Voldemort wins in like year two.
He'd be the biggest threat to Voldemort. At Voldemort, like, oh shit, this guy's too powerful. What do I do?
And that's a battle I'd like to see: Ralph Fiennes and Charles Dance.
Yeah, and then who's Hogwarts' only defense? Professor Liam Neeson. There you go. That's when it all. That's
and
when
Maggie all Smith. And Maggie Smith.
Maggie Smith could get shit done. Yeah, you can't tell me otherwise. She is just.
Yeah.
Dog. She is top dog. Every single movie.
She's the only reason that dueling in these movies didn't deteriorate. The reason I love Order of the Phoenix is because of the duel between Voldemort and Dumbledore at the end, because they're actually using fucking spells, not little flashes of light or green beam versus red beam, which is what all dueling is now, until Maggie Smith starts throwing fire at Snape.
Now that scene, I mean, again, talk about getting chills every single time. I literally saw a TikTok the other day. They reposted it on TikTok and I was just like, wow, this is a masterpiece.
Yeah, and then, of course, we have the biggest question that I have, and another spinoff movie that I'd like to see. Maybe we could touch on this in the Luna Lovegood sequel, possibly. The Secret Life of Nagini, when Nagini is the old woman.
Yeah.
Is he living as the old woman until Harry shows up? Like, what?
I want to know, like, what goes through his mind in that moment? Like, when Voldemort makes him an old woman, is he like, what the hell is going on?
Nagini is a her. In the Crimes of Grindelwald, they established that she was a person that was cursed with the ability to turn into a snake and eventually turned into a snake permanently, which I fucking hate, but whatever.
So is it that woman?
No. It was like, I don't think
she was a housekeeper for the Potters, I believe. Because who was that? It was Harry or Hermione recognized her. And then
it's Harry. Yeah. Harry recognizes her.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, is Nagini getting groceries as that woman? like is this snake living as a woman? Like,
I know they're gonna come.
Right.
When are they going to come?
Right. Is this old woman buying like dead rats and crickets or something? You know, just to like eat dinner, like waiting for Harry to show up.
That also raises the question: Why did Voldemort keep Nagini with him? Why isn't he like, you're in danger here. Let me send you to fucking France or something.
Well, he did. In the second one, we see that he does put him in a boathouse, but mm-hmm. Voldemort's standing like 10 feet away, you know, so he didn't really hide too far.
It's any of the fucking Horcruxes. I hate this goddamn scavenger hunt plotline. I hate that that's how they decided to deal with Voldemort.
Well, you see, and then we'll get into it in the second one, because it actually kind of, it makes sense because they're actually getting things done. Where in this one, we're just walking around with one, like, for 2 hours, not doing anything but talking. And then, of course, when Ron comes back from his vacation from the movie, and all of a sudden we have to have him watch a CGI smoke version of his two naked friends make out. Because that's what we needed in this movie, was naked Emma Watson and Daniel Radcliffe just making out, you know?
Even the logic there of sending Ron off for like 2.5 hours over just like him being upset with like Hermione and Harry and thinking something's going on there. It's like, well,
Ron in movie 4 and Ron in movie 7 are the fucking worst.
That I hate sense.
Him. Just basically a jealous little bitch in both movies. That's like the only way to describe him, is him just insecure that, you know, Harry's the chosen one. He has this big name. All attention is usually on Harry, and Harry could do this and that. And then Ron just can't live up to that same expectation as it.
You know, honestly, I blame Mrs. Weasley, because she treats Harry so much better than she treats Ron.
Oh, 100%. I mean, even look at the, when the blabbing envelope came, it's like, Ronald Weasley.
That is such a terrifying invention.
Yeah.
Terrifying invention.
Oh, God.
That thing can look elsewhere and see somebody else. I'm like, hey, you're cool. What's up? Then go back to its main, like, you know, subject and just start cursing them out. That's an envelope with a brain. Well, I don't like it.
To bring up movie 2, Taylor, that's your favorite of the movies, right?
That is my favorite of the movies, actually.
Snakes. That's the first time I've heard someone say, like, I like the Chamber of Secrets, but it's not usually in people's top, like, top of the list.
Like, Chamber of Secrets is kind of like that initial stepping stone of like really building into like Voldemort's past, connection to Hogwarts, the whole parcel tongue, the whole snake idea with Harry and everything, and his connection to Voldemort. And I mean, a lot of people think of it in Goblet of Fire when Voldemort comes back and that whole aspect, but I just see it stemming of Chamber of Secrets, and I'm a huge horror movie fan, so I feel like that kind of has a bit of a creepy factor to it. So
the spider scene is the scary, like the creepiest scene in pretty much any.
That's why I stopped watching Lord of the Rings, because after that spider scene, I was scarred for life. And I'm like, hell no, am I picking up another Lord of the Rings movie for as long as I live.
But, yeah, and that shows somebody in the creative team for Harry Potter was paying attention to the Lord of the Rings and was like, hey, what makes money? It's giant spiders. All right, let's throw it in. Let's get some money.
No. Giant spiders that are afraid of giant snakes.
Oh, right. No. Even if the Harry Potter ride at Universal, that one scene in the Gryffindor, or not Gryffindor, Hogwarts ride, I close my eyes every single time. I cannot look. I don't want to be that close to even an animatronic spider. I don't care if it's fake or not. That thing's coming to life to me. I'm not being near him. I want nothing to do with that fake spider at all.
Yeah, and those Disney Imagineers, they're going to
sympathize with Ron.
But, me and Ron would walk off sulking together. I saw a spider, I'd be like, absolutely not. Ron, we're out of here. We can go complain together elsewhere. I don't need to be on screen anymore.
Those Disney Imagineers one day will find a way to make them sentient. So they will be acting, like literally.
It's a good thing it's at Universal, Ross.
Who cares?
And that's the day I stop going when they figure
Disney
that
owns
out.
Everything. Who gives a shit? But then, you know, of course, there's also like, and you mentioned that your favorite movie is obviously the second one, but those original couple movies, they have the good balance between the darkness and then the silly hijinks of Hogwarts, you know, like the fun, the light, the good stuff. In this movie, especially these two, it's all dark all the time, except for that one scene where Harry and Hermione dance to that terrible song. And it's supposed to be all lighthearted and fun, but it's 30 seconds in a movie that's just nothing but moping and grim darkness. That's all it is.
But that's what makes movies like 1 through 4 so great. It's like, yeah, you have that whole aspect of like Voldemort building as a character, the severity of it, his connection to Harry and how it's going to come into play later on. But then you have the silly, like witty comments from Ron and Harry, or then even Snape just like being an ass to the two of them and stuff like that. Or even Hermione basically calling them idiots throughout the whole movie. It's like you have that mixture of like sci-fi action, but then also humor. Where Order of the Phoenix, The Deathly Hallows Part 2, it's just everyone's dying. You find out more morbid things of each character and the darkness of the past of each character. And it's just like more so sci-fi drama than it is, you know, sci-fi, comedy, action, ordeal.
So I do think with all of them besides this movie, you get the action to counterbalance the darkness. The next movie, they rush into that climax. Like, they get to the Battle of Hogwarts pretty quickly in the second
movie. They do, but there's no action in Deathly Hallows Part 1. I don't know. You get, like, the Battle of the Five Potters in the beginning of the movie. You get the Nagini scene, which was a lasting maybe 3 minutes at most. And then you get the end where some of the Death Eaters catch up to Harry and all of them. And the whole Bellatrix ordeal and when Dobby dies. And again, that's the very end of the movie. And even that, I wouldn't really call it action-y, besides maybe the fact of them running through the woods once again.
That's the only action scene I really consider in this movie is the Battle of the Five Battle of the Five Harrys.
You said hobbits, didn't you?
Not Lord of the Rings in your mind now.
Yep.
The only person that brings any comedy to this are the Weasley twins. The best line in this whole movie is "Morning."
Weasley twin, soon to be Weasley one.
Yeah, that's the one death I can't get over. That's the only one.
But why don't we talk about the final, you know, 15 minutes of this movie where everything actually starts to happen. And one of the biggest things that I was like, you know, not quite screaming at the TV because my wife was sleeping in the chair next to me, so I didn't really want to wake her up. But
and she's a big Harry Potter fan too, and she couldn't make it through this.
Well, yeah, no, she was out.
That's a lot. But
yeah, so it's like when it's Bellatrix, you know, Draco and the Malfoys, they're trying to figure out who Hermione and Ron are with. Hey, look, it's this, you know, this his face is all messed up. It's like, but Hermione and Ron are here. There are three people. Who are Hermione and Ron always hanging out with? Who is this guy that the left side of his face, that kind of looks like Harry Potter. Maybe it's Harry Potter. Do we really need to do this little tribunal investigation thing here? Use some goddamn deduction here, people. That's obviously Harry Potter.
These people obviously have terrible test-taking skills. Well, if this is this, and this is this, then this must be this.
Right. It's like who is the only person that hangs out with Ron and Hermione?
It's not like his face, was deformed, but it wasn't like unbearably deformed. I mean, the guy still had his same like whole posture, still hair. Just basically his face was bubbly and his glasses were off. It's really not that much of a difference here.
Well, it's like that cinematic beat up, you know, it's like whenever you watch the Marvel movies, Captain America gets, you know, beat the hell up, but his face only shows one little scratch because you have to have Chris Evans's beautiful face on screen. You know, you can't mangle him up.
You can't mess up that man dying.
Right. You can't mangle him up. But like Daniel Radcliffe, it's almost like, all right, we're paying this kid now at this point. So we got to get at least part of his face to not be messed up, you know?
Yeah.
But then, of course, we get Dobby's a free elf, and then Dobby catches one in the chest because Bellatrix Lestrange is, you know, she's gone to Urban Axes. She's chucking knives and doing everything else, and she's hitting you through a warp tunnel or whatever.
And that's
classes, clearly.
And that's like they show apparition as being instant throughout this whole franchise, and Bellatrix. It shows like a little tunnel closing up that somehow a flying knife can go through.
Yeah.
The one time it was slow motion out of now seven movies. And
yeah, they let Zack Snyder shoot that part. But and it's of course, and that's the thing that pissed me off, you know, even though Wizard Gollum is now dead, it annoyed me that Harry's first words are like, we have to bury him. You know, like a good Christian burial for this wizard elf. You know, it's like there's no way that's no way that's the process that this guy would want to be. He would want some sort of magical funeral, I'm guessing. Not just burial.
I don't know.
Let's dig a 2-foot hole in the sand in the middle of nowhere. No one will ever.
High tide comes up, washes Dobby's little body away.
He's halfway to Florida by the end of the second movie.
I want to meet
they spotted Dobby in Miami at the moment, you know, raging up right now.
I want to exactly. meet the Miami-based wizards.
Yeah, right. Oh yeah, just a bunch of Cuban wizards, you know. Bunch of gold chains on their wands, and they have rims on their wands, you know.
Check that out there, you know.
It's them. A lot of high-waisted white pants. Yeah.
And they all fear Professor Liam Neeson.
They do. Everyone does. He's the scourge of the wizarding world.
Doesn't even have magic. Just has the power of gun.
Just has the power of kick your ass. That's what he has the power of. But yeah, I mean, and then it's, you know, of course we find out that Dumbledore himself was buried in a modern art sculpture in the middle of Stonehenge or some shit.
With the wand with him.
Right, yeah, of course.
In the middle of nowhere, anyone can get to. With the stone on top, wand right in hand.
Right. Yeah, just make sure it's easily accessible for the one guy that they don't want to get it. You know?
Also, we'll get into it more at the second movie, but the whole wand loyalty things is fucking bizarre.
Even that, you have Voldemort hiding his horcruxes in random caverns, his snake, Harry himself, all this. Then you talk about Hermione explains the whole idea of the Deathly Hallows and the importance of this wand. And you talk about all these big hiding spots, but no, you leave this one important element that everyone but Voldemort should not have right in his hands.
And we'll get into it in the second movie. Because in the second movie is when we actually get the explanation of the Deathly Hallows, right? That's in the second.
We get the story in this one.
When they're in Luna Lovegood's house.
Right. Okay. That's right. I couldn't remember when we have story time. And
I actually think the Deathly Hallows story is a pretty cool looking sequence.
It is. It's awesome. But the thing is, they say that the three together form the Deathly Hallows. It's the cloak, the wand, and the resurrection stone. And we get the resurrection stone, we get the wand, but the invisibility cloak never comes back.
Yeah, it does.
When?
When they go in the second one, yeah, when they go into Gringotts, Harry goes in with the invisibility.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, but they never combine them because that's like the whole point of the story, right? They like you combine them and do some shit.
it's definitely not as predominant as it should. Like compared to the other two, it definitely isn't as much as it.
And that one's supposed to be the one that actually, you know, works.
Yeah, that's the one that got the guy to live a nice long life, you know?
I was watching the CinemaSins on the story, and he was like, wait a minute, did he stay invisible the whole time to run from death? Like, how did he get a wife? How did he have sex? Because it implies that he had a child that he passed it down to. What kind of game was the third brother spitting that he could be invisible in?
Just casually pop his head out when he sees like a pretty girl. He's like, hey, I think you're cute. Here you go. Bye.
Hey, we can do whatever we want under here and ain't nobody gonna see us. We're in the middle of this crowded London square. Why don't we just get down, you know? But yeah, all of that. But then it's like, okay, this is like, it's direction wise and having Emma Watson do the narration, it's a really good like little like bonus feature that you could throw on a DVD or something, but it really is just more in a movie that doesn't really need to be there, even though it is the one thing that they do need to kind of explain, like it's the title of the movie, like what is it, the symbol and all of that.
It's one of the only fascinating scenes in the movie.
And it happens in like the last 15 minutes of the movie.
But like that's what you could do. You could graph the last, I'd say, half hour of this movie off. Just take that story and then all the stuff with Dobby and just graph it on the beginning of the part two, and you have almost a perfect ending to this franchise. You don't need everything that led up to that in part one.
So with the other thing that always bothered me with this movie is after when they're moving all the Harry Potters and when they come in, they're looping like asking questions for people as they come in, and I'm like, okay, all right, that makes sense. They want to establish who's who. I don't think I would have remembered that detail that you bring up, but okay, I see what you're going with here. And then they just sort of stop doing it, and then they have a wedding
who they twice.
They have a wedding. Is every guest in this wedding, what happened on this Thursday of this year?
Right. And you better remember or else you're not getting in. We're killing you.
Well, it's casual. It's so like, oh, let's go into hiding, but let's make sure I have this wedding also.
Yeah. Yeah. Which
that's very discreet and secretive.
Which gets attacked as well.
Also brings up one of my biggest gripes with the movies is they so do not do Fleur Delacour any justice.
Oh, absolutely not.
Well, she was not awesome Hermione, in the books.
Yeah, she's not Hermione, so what's the point, you know?
Or Luna Lovegood.
Exactly. And no one is Luna Lovegood. And on that, why don't we do our beer check-in? So, Taylor, how's your cider doing?
My cider's doing real good. About halfway through it, it's 5.5% and I'm lightweight. So, pacing myself here. We're gonna have a tipsy Taylor by the end of this.
All right. Mike, how's your beer?
Doing all right. I don't really know how to gauge how much, like, I'm about, it's like a 32 ounce can that I'm drinking from. So,
like a big crowler.
Yeah, because they don't actually, like, you have to go to the brewery to get their cans. But I'm probably almost halfway through it.
Nice. Nice. Yeah, and I'm about to work on start number 3 of my Enlightened. Spellbound Pale Ale, 3.5%. And like I said, not feeling anything, but it tastes like a beer. So we're good to go. But so why don't we go on to the big finale, Deathly Hallows Part 2. And it's from 2011, so 10 years ago. And how did you guys watch this film?
Midnight showing.
Okay. No, like you didn't, when you rewatched it, it was on TV, Taylor?
Oh, yeah. Rewatch on TV.
Okay. Mike, how did you watch it?
I have the extended cut on DVD.
Okay. Did you have that Pottermore ad featuring J.K. Rowling at the beginning of it?
No.
Okay. On the Blu-ray series that I got my wife, the All 8 Films on Blu-ray, there's, before this movie, there is J.K. Rowling comes out and she's sitting down on like a chair and she starts talking about how great it is to be a billionaire author of a fantasy series. And she thanks, and I quote, "No author could ask for a more diverse and loyal readership." Unless I'm guessing, of course, she wanted to probably add in, "Unless you're trans and I don't want your money and I hate you." But obviously they probably edited that part out. But yeah, it's just this weird ad for Pottermore before this movie, and it's like, okay.
You guys ever been on Pottermore?
Yeah, no. I've taken the sorting hat quiz and the Patronus quiz.
I was about to ask the sorting hat quiz. What each?
Were you in Hufflepuff, Mike?
I was Ravenclaw.
Mm. I can see that.
Now you.
Or are you Taylor?
I got Slytherin.
Of course.
Which they, I, the whole point of this movie is like, oh, the pure blood, the people that hate mudbloods are Nazis. And then Hogwarts are like, send all the Slytherins to the fucking dungeon.
Yeah, every single one of them. There can't be a possible good one. All of them out of here.
Yeah, I especially like when they point, when Maggie Smith points out the one chick, because she's like, "Why aren't you guys getting Harry's right there?" It's like, okay, Slytherin, go make sure you lock this bitch up on the way, you know.
But I love how it's just like all Harry. Of them go, all just because of this one girl called out. Like, why don't we get them?
Right. And then I love how they're
one
all
one girl just send the whole bunch out of here.
How are we trusting Filch to deal with this? You know, Filch doesn't have any magic. How is Filch gonna take care of all of these basically right, high school seniors?
Run. So not even that. He can't even run or do anything.
He's running with a cat in his arms.
You know? He'll call it running too. He's doing like high knees as he's going down the aisle.
I fucking love Filch.
Yeah. But like, and then it cracks me up because Harry, like the Snape, and I noticed it in this movie the most because I think Rickman gets the most to do in this movie out of all the series, with good reason, because his backstory obviously plays a huge part. But in this beginning, when he's doing that, if you're harboring Harry Potter and yada yada yada, and then Harry steps up like a jeez, it's like, bitch, I'm right here, what's up? And then when he's delivering his lines, it sounds like Rickman is just like making up his lines as he goes along, because his like pauses and enunciations are so like Christopher Walken-y kind of, you know?
Oh, let's get Professor Christopher Walken in on this. What does he teach?
Yeah, he teaches linguistics at Howard.
Sounds like a pretty lit school if you ask me.
Yeah, he teaches you how to pronounce all the spells.
Wait,
and nobody ever gets them right.
There is one MacGuffin in these two movies that almost ruins the entire thing. And that is the whole Dumbledore insists that he has to kill Harry, because it takes away any tension involving Harry fighting anyone besides Voldemort. And B, like, okay, so the only way the Horcrux and Harry dies is if Voldemort kills him himself. So Voldemort is just a fucking moron.
Yeah, I mean, that's to say the least in most of the movies here.
They reduce Ray Fiennes to a fucking moron.
Yeah, yeah, and speaking of Fiennes, because we do get the most of Ray Fiennes as Voldemort in this movie as well. I do like when he's, and this is towards the end, when Harry's allegedly dead, quote unquote dead, and Hagrid, who has somehow reappeared in this movie just to be able to carry Harry, when Voldemort does that like speech of, whoever joins our ranks, you won't die, all that, yada, yada. But the way that Fiennes like hams it up in that scene, he's like turning to the crowd. He's laughing with them. He's
skipping
smiling.
Around even that. It's not even like that. He's like frolicking through the gardens right. of Hogwarts there. Just like, everyone, let's go.
Right, he's like roasting Neville and shit.
But you know what probably would have put down Voldemort so quick is if everyone just decided to suddenly start calling him Tom again. Right. Like, Voldemort probably would have just been like, you know what, I'm just going to fucking kill myself.
Right, don't do it. I'm not Tom Riddle, I'm Voldemort.
My name's not Tom like anymore, guys.
Happy name, Voldemort, this big name. If someone just said Tom Riddle, he'd be like, this is it.
Don't even give him the last name, just, hey, Tom.
Well, that's what Harry does. Harry grabs him when he's like, what's up, Tom? It's like, want to go to hell tonight? And then they jump off like the building. He's like, it's a good day to die, Voldemort, like, Tom. And then they just go. But yeah, so like the whole, it cracks me up because Ray Fiennes is such a great actor, but there's a couple scenes, especially when he's like, when Harry's looking at Snape's memory and Voldemort is also seeing the memory. He keeps doing that, like, hand to the head thing, where, like, normal people with hair would be, like, pushing their hair back, but it seems like because he's bald, he's trying to do the same thing, but he forgets doesn't have hair. So, like, it just looks odd with his hands like that. I'm like, what is he
just doing? Just molesting his scalp, basically.
Well, it would be kind of funny if Voldemort actually could grow hair, he just chose to shave it bald, and he's actually doing that, he's feeling the stubble because it kind of feels cool.
It's time to shave again. It's been a couple days.
This is John Bellatrix. Get the razor.
Right. The horseshoe's coming back. I got to get rid of this. I can't go to the battle with stubble. I know, embarrassing.
Voldemort has a George Costanza haircut.
That would be great. It's just like, you know how embarrassing this is? He has to put like a toupee on. He has to use like the wizard equivalent of like Hair Club for Men.
Which Harry's dad is actually Harry's grandpa's who made it. That's the Potter fortune was from magical hair care products.
Of course it was. Of course it was. That's probably why Voldemort's half pissed at him, because he has no hair and Harry's got that luxurious mane.
Oh, and another thing. So Voldemort uses Avada Kedavra to kill Harry. Why doesn't he use the throat slash thing he did against Snape? Harry couldn't have came back from his, you know, windpipe being cut open.
Right. Yeah, and then of course he's got Nagini to finish off Snape with those like couple timed like bites or whatever they show through the window.
Also, well, obviously the only reason the way Snape dies is so Harry can get the memory. But you would think Voldemort is like, you know, Snape, you've been loyal. Maybe I'm going to kill you with Avada Kedavra because that's not supposed to be painful at all.
Now, Taylor, this is where you get the unfortunate pleasure of hearing me become very gross. Because in all of these episodes I've gone to, especially the Harry Potter ones, okay, so we've seen in these movies that Dumbledore can pull memories out of his head, put him in the pool, and watch. Now we know that tears have memories, do other bodily fluids have memory? So, like, if it wasn't per se a tear coming out of Snape, would that also have memories?
I mean, it is part of him.
Yeah. I mean, it's like if he has a particularly good night one night, you know, with, I don't know, a headmistress of Hufflepuff or something like that, does he get to revisit that over and over? you know, jerking off in a puddle.
Reminiscing on this.
I never even considered this, Ross, and I hate you for making me consider it.
See, I told you, Mike, when we had Bobby on, I ruined Lord of the Rings for him. I'm kind of trying to do that for Taylor, but I'm glad I'm doing it for you.
Yeah, that's also, Ross is also the guy that came up with a Pixar movie from the view of sperm.
The guy jerking off in the back of the movie theater, yeah.
Well, they do say Disney hides a secret sexual innuendo in each movie.
This would be like the twist at the end. The twist off, per
this
se.
Is what you find in those like extra scenes when you get the Blu-ray edition.
Yep. Yeah, this is the uncut director's edition.
Is this the moment where we can start talk about how Snape is still a scumbag even after his redemption?
No. Yeah, he kind of is. He kind of is.
He really isn't, though.
He called his crush, his infatuation, a racial slur, and then gaslighted her about it, and then hated a guy's kid for bullying him like 30 years later. Okay.
He was protecting Harry the entire time. So you can't really say that, like, he hated this kid. He literally lost his life protecting this kid.
But that doesn't change the fact that during the kid's life, he bullied an orphan.
Well, why are you, you're so caught up on Neville Longbottom?
Well,
all characters. Like, fucking Neville Longbottom. Are you kidding? The kid who ripped out a plant that was screaming.
He fainted. Well, I mean, the kid has gone through a lot. He doesn't need a teacher constantly bullying
him. It doesn't take Neville, like, much for him to go through a lot. Kid is very sensitive. I mean,
Neville comes out at the end. He's the only one who starts to stand up and all that. Yeah.
Also, Neville walks away the best looking of the entire Potter crew.
That is true. Yeah, he does. He's, you know, British GQ Man of the Year and all that. We're discussing the fact that, you know, Snape's past. Are we going to discuss the fact that he was basically Ichabod Crane as a kid? We're not going to discuss that. I mean,
fine Adam's apple.
Yeah. He's like, he really kept walking out of that tree like fucking Ichabod Crane. I was like, what is happening right also, now?
Wait, I think the worst thing about the flashback, though, is the whole point, like, the entire series, they're like, oh, Harry has his mom's eyes. They look at Kid Lily. She has brown eyes. Harry doesn't have brown eyes.
No.
Well, her eyes eventually become like green blue, but.
Well, a little biological mishap we have there.
That's where the question becomes. Is it really Snape's kid?
No, because if it's, well, I guess, like, I don't know, two brown eyes can produce blue eyes.
Yeah, I'm not even going to bother trying to remember high school biology to even care about that.
But, I wasn't a science major for a reason.
Two blue eyes can't become brown eyes, but two brown eyes can become blue eyes.
It was, my dad had brown, my mom had blue, so I have blue. But yeah, I was trying to think of that. But
my mom had brown, my dad had blue, I have green. So,
oh, there you go.
I don't really know where this all come from.
Green is just a mutation on blue.
So I'm a mutant, is what
you're an X-Man. Yeah, you can't go to Hogwarts anymore, Taylor. You got to go to Professor Xavier School for the Gifted. You got to head up to New York.
I'm like, hey guys, be like, oh, what's your power? I'm like, I got green eyes.
Ooh,
they're like, ah, she's in. She's got something going on here.
At some point in the 70s and 80s, that's pretty much what Stan Lee was resorting to. He's like, oh, new mutant, green eyes. That's it. That's all I got.
Can't be worse than Jubilee. You're in.
Yeah, it was pretty much right after Jubilee. It's like girl that shoots sparks from her fingers and her friend with green eyes. I'm done. I'm just gonna start collecting paychecks.
But yeah, no. Snape tortures this poor kid whose parents were tortured to insanity, and we're expected to be like, oh, yeah, all is forgiven. No, you're a complex character, and I think he's a good character, but he's still a scumbag.
not a scumbag. That's an extensive word. He literally sacrifices, like, not even only for Harry, but for Draco also. Because technically, Draco is the older, the owner of the Elder Wand. And he knew that Voldemort would go after him if he was the one that killed Voldemort. But he was just the one that dismantled him, which still made him the owner. But Snape, not even of Voldemort's request, also wanting to protect Draco from it, took the action. He literally saved the life of two children who have no biological tie to him whatsoever.
I'm not saying he doesn't have merits. I'm just saying his merits don't necessarily outweigh his character flaws.
Because he hit children in the back of the head with a book?
No.
That's what he does. So we're going into background information of our personal imagination.
In book three, Neville gets a potion wrong and it could be poisonous, and Snape makes him try and see what it does on his pet.
I mean, gotta find out.
Now imagine you're taking Snape's class and he makes you use a spell that you got wrong that could be poisonous on Charlie. You're forgiving him for saving the chosen one's life?
I'm not forgiving him, but I mean, ultimately at the end of the day, Neville was fine. He walked out a hero. Harry walked out, survived. Draco walked out, survived, and had a pretty good redemption character arc there.
Draco ran away, technically, with his parents.
Yeah. I'm saying overall, I was going to get to that I hate how that just ended up there, that there was no some big whoop-de-doo, that he just kind of was like, all right, Mom, let's boop-boop-bop on out of here.
No, I think I think Draco should have had a bigger redemption arc than Snape.
But think, even given I'm saying his role in the half Blood Prince there and how big he was with that, you would think they would do something like a little more significant, a little more predominant of him helping Harry, Hermione, or Ron with the whole Battle of Hogwarts thing. But literally everyone goes into fighting. He's just standing there and he looks at his mom. He's like, I don't know. Let's get out of here. They just go happily walk off down a bridge together.
That's what it's hard to even call it a redemption arc for him.
25 years later with a wife and a child boarding the train to Hogwarts.
It's hard to even call it a redemption arc for him, because really, like 15 minutes before he walks away, he's his friends throwing fiend fire in the room of requirement and they're trying to kill Harry. Which actually, what is it? Which one actually gets to stick around, Crabbe or Goyle? Because one of them got in trouble with drugs and got arrested, so they
it wasn't just drugs. He was also charged with rioting. Like, he was involved in some pretty serious rioting as well. And it's Crabbe, I think, is the one, that actor.
The wonders that Hollywood does to you.
Yeah, there were some riots or something in London or whatever, and he was like a number one, dead front and center, and they were like, wait a minute. Can't be in movies anymore.
One of the best lines in this movie is Goyle says, do him, Draco. And I was like, well, if you go that route, you're not breaking the rule of Voldemort has to kill Harry. Now, what would have been golden is if Draco immediately after that line said, scared, Potter.
But yeah, and then I think in all of this, and with this movie, because this movie is a brisk 2 hours and 10 minutes, you don't even feel it go by. And that's obviously very much going for it. But one of the craziest things in this, you know, it's kind of, if you don't think too much about it, you'll miss it. But Hogwarts, during all of this, still has classes going on. You know, it's still an active school year. What the hell?
What was somebody thinking? Like, there's a lot of trauma going on right now, but let's make sure you stay caught up with
Voldemort wanted to, like, he doesn't necessarily, like, in his speech at the end, he is saying, like, I don't want to spill all this, like, magical blood for the pure bloods and half bloods anyway. He's like, I think he wants there to be, like, a wizarding world. Like, he doesn't want to get rid of all the education for young wizards.
No, he doesn't want that, but he wants it in his way, and that's everyone bows down to Voldemort, and everyone is absolutely
all my
dedication is to you.
Because they started teaching the dark arts instead of defense against the dark arts.
Yeah, and he wants people to basically, like, almost live for Voldemort. Like, not live and learn to be a wizard, but learn to work for Voldemort is what he mostly wants.
Right, and then take over the rest of the actual world.
And then basically just become supreme leader of.
Right. Yeah, and then of course we get Kieran Hines as Dumbledore 2. And it's when I saw that, I'm like, oh man, that actor, who is that? And I look it up, I'm like, Kieran Hines, are you serious with this? There's no way. He's like almost unrecognizable.
You think Downton Abbey and Game of Thrones had like a fantasy draft after Harry Potter was done? Like, all right, we get Maggie Smith. All right. But we get Kieran Hines.
It was like a divorce where they like kind of where they decide to like separate the kids. You know, it's like, all right, you're drafting the kids, taking them off. You get to be this, you know, posh British drama. You get to die by dragon fire.
Okay. You get to die in a wedding.
Right. You get to come over here, get your throat slit at your son's wedding. All right.
Sleeper pick. We're going to draft Hermione's mom that shows up in a scene.
Right. You're going to be, yeah. It's like, Jim, you're going to be a banker. Get over here, Mr. Broadbent. But yeah, it's so like, and Kara mentioned it, she noticed it more than I did, but like the score of this movie is so amazing. It's just like amazingly dramatic and powerful and just perfect almost at every turn, you know.
Oh yeah. It was nominated for 3 Oscars, and I wanted to say, I know it wasn't nominated for sound, but it was nominated for art direction, visual effects, and makeup.
Well, even think of just the timing that it was in like 2011, and even just CGI like starting to become predominantly big there, but like how realistic it looked. I mean, even if you look at some clips they posted of behind the scenes and like what was actually going on versus what the final product was, it's insane the difference and like what they did. And you know, you're looking at a scene and you think it's this like whole school going on looking realistic. And in reality, it's about 10 feet of this and maybe like only 4 actors on the stage.
Yeah, kind of off topic, but keeping up with the CGI, a little fact I learned the other day in Captain America Civil War, the airport scene where they're all fighting. A lot of the time, Scarlett Johansson was the only person on set because everyone else was CGI'd in. So it was just Scarlett Johansson running around fake fighting no one.
Yeah, that's, I mean, again, it's like when you see those like making of videos, you're like, wow, this really takes the movie magic out of it, you know, when you see him pretending to do things.
Like, think of them, like, even at the end, like, Harry and Voldemort doing, like, their final battle with the wands, or even them throughout the scene during the battle, they're just flicking around a twig.
Right.
That's all, like, nothing's coming out of it. Imagine you're just like, standing there staring at someone, like,
yeah, they're just, like, so pointing intense at each other, and, you know, like, like, okay, it's taking a lot of energy. Grit your teeth. Okay.
Like the silent, awkward stance of just like squatting and gritting their teeth and scrunching their forehead. And like, you see the final product and you're like, wow, this is so nicely made. And then you see the behind the scenes clip and you're like, I wonder how many times it took them to not laugh during this scene.
Right. You gotta feel so ridiculous.
But that's also like with Star Wars, Ewan McGregor, whenever he was in a lightsaber fight scene, he would go pew, pew, pew. I mean,
how can you not, really? It's gotta be just so ridiculous to film that and then try to be serious about it, you know? Like obviously the final cut, it's all well and great and it works perfectly with all the pieces coming together. But when you look at what originally has to happen, because it used to be when you would have to film it, like you'd have to film it once with the other, with a stand-in. Then you'd have to do it once by yourself. And then you'd have to do the other person do it by themselves. And then you would like combine the footage and add some camera work. So you're filming the scene like 5 different times in 5 different ways, half of which with nobody next to you. And you just have to pretend to be doing what you were doing and reacting. Yeah.
You know what they really should have done? They should have brought in Professor Sean Bean. And we don't meet Professor Sean Bean until the Battle of Hogwarts, where he promptly walks out and gets hit by a Madame Kadabra and dies.
He just falls off of a building, like a precipice somewhere. A rock falls on him. He's walking out going, what's going on here, guys? And then a rock falls on him.
No, Professor Sean.
Oh, shit. It was Professor Ned Stark. Oh, no.
Premier.
Professor Liam Neeson walks out over his body and like, you know, roundhouse kicks somebody.
Voldemort just runs away as soon as Professor Neeson comes out.
I quit. I'm gonna retreat, run away.
he apparates away somehow. Liam Neeson is where where he apparates.
You'll never get away from me, Voldemort.
If he made Nagini, Liam Neeson.
You can't beat that. You know, snake Liam Neeson. Now, what if it, since we know Nagini will live as people and just live a life, what if Nagini is Professor Liam Neeson? That's just exactly the way he keeps an eye on people, you know?
Nobody's gonna know.
He's so violent to everybody because he's a damn snake, you know?
They established magic can't destroy these things. Now, what if they did try the power of gun to destroy? Like, do you think a gun would have stopped Nagini?
It probably would have at least put him down for a little bit.
Well, first of all, if Voldemort carried a gun with him, none of this type of shit happens in the first place, because Voldemort just, you know, instead of trying to Avada Kedavra Harry, just goes, you know.
Yeah, I'm not above killing a baby. I'm not above killing a baby. Let's do this. I'm evil. But, you know, yes, and that's the thing with this, because you need like a basilisk fang, or you need that sword to kill Horcruxes, and it is pretty badass. Like when Neville out of nowhere pops up and's like, "Dink," and just decapitates Nagini, and there's all the smoke, and it's the big, you know, dramatic music, and Hermione and Ron are hugging, like, you know,
gripping his chest in agony.
Yeah, and that's the other thing, like some of the reaction shots that Fiennes has to do when, like, another Horcrux dies, and it's, when he does that, you know, like, the director must have been like, all right, okay, Rafe, you're in the middle of the thing, you're pretending to shoot lasers out of your wand, oh no, your snake is dead, react, and then Rafe's just kind of like, he just has this weird look on his face, like he's trying not to shit his pants, you know?
I'd like to believe that Rafe had an actual pet snake that he would be very upset if it did die, so he was just thinking about that.
Right, yeah, he's just in...
The reaction scenes in general, like throughout, especially Deathly Hallows Part 2, when Voldemort was like in everyone's head, like making the announcements, just them standing there would be like, all right, pretend you're listening to someone give a lengthy speech and go.
Yeah, and you're screaming your head off, and you scream your head off. Okay, go ahead. Act.
Now, with that, the only thing that scene did for me was confirm that Ralph Fiennes should never try and do ASMR.
No, it's rough.
It wasn't pleasant to the ear. Kind of caused some nightmares.
Yeah, I have a problem with people whispering in movies in general, because it's always like, it's, for me, it's like anti-ASMR, because like the hard C's and P's and T's, like, it just pisses me off. I'm like, just say it normally. You know, you don't need to sound like this. No one whispers this way. It just doesn't. No one does that.
Also, Ralph Fiennes' voice is, it's almost calming, but in an evil way. Like, Ralph Fiennes just has a naturally evil voice.
Yeah. Yeah. And then his natural accent is actually more along like the comical British accent side. Like, it's proper, but it's still kind of funny. Yeah. You know? But of course, now, obviously, at the very end, the big winner of this is obviously Thanos, because Voldemort gets blipped away to ash, and we don't know what happened.
Yeah, but imagine that was the actual ending. You just have that, like, it cuts over to Infinity War, Thanos snaps, and Voldemort turns the dust.
It cuts to him, like, as he's sitting on, like, his little farm, like, walking at the sunset. So it just cuts to that, and then just ends.
Professor Thanos.
19 years later, Harry Potter, like, same epilogue, just 19 years later. After Thanos is snapped, killed,
and Voldemort. then they reverse the snap in Infinity War and Endgame, and Voldemort's back.
Then Harry's life has gone to hell. You know, he's like, oh God, not again, not again. God damn you, Tony Stark.
That was the big complaint with this movie, was Voldemort's death, because in the book, if I remember correctly, he gets hit with the killing curse and just sort of falls over dead, like anyone else would if they got hit with the killing curse.
Yeah.
Taylor, can you confirm?
I can confirm this. Yes, that is what happened.
Yeah, it's like, yeah.
Like nothing he was. And like that scene with like Dumbledore and heaven with Harry. They're kind of like walking and talking and they found that like little shriveled up Voldemort. It's like
curly fry Voldemort.
Yeah. And like kind of curled into that little thing.
Yeah, it's that whole thing where it's like, you got to die, but of course we're not going to kill Harry, so we got to send him back because our main characters can cheat death.
But you know, if Voldemort just did the whole throat slit spell, I don't know, like Harry comes back and he's like, oh shit, I still can't breathe, dies again, Voldemort wins.
Yeah, I'm still bleeding. I'm still bleeding.
The resurrection stone brought me back, but I'm just going to die again.
Right, now I'm on the other side. Ah, crap. But
Dumbledore, do over.
Yeah, no, one more time. but
that's also brings up the whole theory that Voldemort, Snape, and Harry are the three brothers in the Deathly Hallows story, and Dumbledore is death.
I can see that.
Voldemort's the oldest brother that wants the that died for power. Yeah. Snape's the middle brother that died for love, and Harry's the youngest brother that greeted death as a friend and Dumbledore's death.
And was walking around like a creep in an invisible cloak, you know, in and out of the Hogwarts girls' locker room and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. You can't tell me that teenage boys with that kind of power, they're not using that shit to be creeps.
Ron's definitely borrowing the invisibility cloak.
Absolutely. He absolutely is. There's no way that somebody else is.
Lavender phase and their obsession with each other.
Oh, poor Ron's ex-girlfriend died in this movie.
Yeah, let's talk about just how like abrupt and morbid that was. Just like came out of left field, her just being eaten alive there.
Yeah,
he's getting chewed on by Fenrir, right?
And that's, we brought this up in the last episode, but are you aware that Lavender Brown had two actors prior to the girl that gets killed by a werewolf?
What do you mean?
So in Harry Potter 3, she is the black girl in the premonition class that talks about the Grimm.
That's her?
Yeah, that's Lavender. Lavender Brown is officially cast as two different black girls before being recasted as a white girl because she has to date Ron.
Yeah, before getting whitewashed. Even though Harry is very much a multiple.
Not even like keeping it like a similar actress, even if that actress like could no longer like fulfill the role. Mm-hmm. We're jumping completely different races here. That's not even anything similar.
Yeah, we're not doing a Richard Harris to Michael Gambon situation. We're doing completely different in every kind of way. Which, actresses.
I counter to that, Crab goes from white to black, so
is that not Crab though?
Yeah, it's not Crab anymore, but he ends up slotting in as Draco's other lackey.
Right. Is that what he was credited as too, Draco's lackey?
No, he has an official name.
But even like the deaths in Deathly Hallows Part 1 and 2, compared to, say, the deaths in prior movies, are just so much more violent and morbid, thinking about, like, all of them. Like, even you have Dobby, who was stabbed to death, Lavender Brown, who was eaten alive, you have Snape, who was literally attacked by Nagini and had his throat slit, and you watched it through the glass. Meanwhile, everyone else was, like, a little abracadabra spell, just kind of got hit and fell over. This, it's like, okay, go on that morbid track. Continue it on.
Well, except for Bellatrix. Bellatrix gets vaporized.
She gets shattered.
Super thin and then just like explodes.
Yeah, she's shattered. Yeah, I was waiting for me. Like, what is the line that Mrs. Weasley has? Like, get away from her, you bitch, or something.
It's not
like
my daughter, you bitch.
My daughter, you bitch. That's right. Yeah, you really gotta hit that hard bitch in your PG-13 movie. You know, you gotta hit that one if you're gonna get it.
Well, that's what we could have brought in Professor Samuel L. Jackson because he's PG-13, and we could have gotten one motherfucker.
That's right. Well, we definitely could have gotten fuck, but it can't be a sexual fuck. It's got to be a regular fuck. Like,
yeah, motherfucker.
Like Harry finds out that he has to die. When it comes out of that dream, he just stares at the camera and goes, fuck.
That's what it, because I think the PG-13 rating started in either the third or fourth movie. So
probably, yeah,
we could have had Dumbledore going, Harry, did you put your name in the fucking Goblet of Fire?
Right. But yeah, it's that whole, again, like the whole, like you said, Taylor, the whole morbidity, but the thing is the, with the morbidity and all that, you, it's the same thing with all of these like young adult franchises. They all start out like, hey, look, it's magic or whatever the happens to be, the plot device happens to be, plus it's happiness and these kids are doing kid stuff in this crazy world. But then there's like that underlying build of the, well, somebody's the chosen one, someone's got the ultimate evil coming after him, something like that, or there's, you know, a kid killing each other tournament, something like that.
Well, that's the thing. That with the Hunger Games, we jump right into children's deathmatch. There's no whimsical.
There's no like building to that. I mean, even if like, not that it's a great franchise, but even like the Twilight franchise is the same thing, or if going Divergent franchise, same thing. People are pushing each other off a cliff there.
Well, at least in Twilight, it's like, look, vampires in high school kind of situation. Yeah. But eventually when you introduce that world ending, universe ending threat, you gotta at some point shed the kid stuff. And you have to bring it to the end where it's everyone's dead, because it's always a big battle to the finish. And it's, you know, it just becomes a giant like superhero movie, essentially. Like it's the ultimate evil versus the ultimate good. And damn the fallout of everyone else that picked the side, you know, because there's got to be collateral damage at some point.
You reminded me of the Mitch Hedberg line. He's like, I was watching HBO. They were making an advertisement for a fight. They said, it's a fight to the finish. That's a good place to end.
Good place to end. That's right. But so, yeah, speaking of ending, we do have the 19 years later epilogue where everyone's just got a little bit of, they take off Jenny's makeup. They give her a mom haircut. They give a little bit of age makeup to Harry, to Daniel Radcliffe and Rupert Grant. And then of course you have what I'm just going to say is the worst origin story for a serial killer ever, because there's no way that Harry's son, Albus, does not snap and become a murderer at Hogwarts, having to live up to his dad's legend at that school. There's no goddamn way.
Albus Severus Potter, worst name ever. Like,
first of all, when he says that, Radcliffe should have looked at the camera and be like, everyone catch that? Because the way he says that name, it's so deliberate with each word, and it's like, hey, everybody remember those two guys? All right, let's move on.
I still argue that if you're going to go with the absolutely absurd name, it should have been like Remus Sirius Potter. They both deserve the namesake more.
Just make it, like, make it rhyme.
Sirius, everything he did for Harry, even if it like didn't seem like that first, and then you learn.
Or, you know, like Ron's dad, Hagrid Potter.
Yeah.
That would be funny if it's like Harry just named him Hagrid for no reason. Hagrid Potter.
You just bend Hagrid, waiting for this like big moment. You're like, you are ready for this, Hagrid.
Hagrid Potter. Scene.
Nothing else.
And he doesn't even get like a cool, like cool ass owl. He gets a friggin' ferret. A ferret. Really? What are we doing here?
And that's a total ripoff of his Dark Materials books, like the Golden Compass, because her thing's a ferret.
It's not a ferret. But this is a ferret. But yeah, I was like, what are we doing here? There's no way this kid is normal. Can't be.
Also, ferrets aren't on the animal list for Hogwarts. I believe we get the animal list of owl, rat, and cat.
Yeah,
it's just like three of them, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, Neville has broken that rule forever with his toad Trevor.
Trevor.
Trevor's toad. Yeah,
that's such a British thing.
Trevor throughout every movie.
That's such a British thing to do.
I was laughing. We were at my friend's house last night, and a girl with her dog walks by, and we had his dogs outside, and her dog tried to come towards the yard, and she goes, no, Edward. I'm like, you named your dog Edward? That's kind of awesome.
No, I was at the beach once with my friends, and we were at a dog beach. Do we have a dog with us? No, we just wanted to play with other people's dogs. And there was this golden retriever that came bounding towards us, whatever, playing with us. And the woman goes, "Huckleberry Finn, will you get back over here?" I'm like, really?
Holy shit.
That's a long name to call.
Right. Yeah, and then you like tackle whatever their last name is, you know. Hope it's not some like long Russian name or something, you know.
But my puppy's middle name is Gordon Bombay because my mom and brother would not let me name my dog after the coach from the Mighty Ducks.
I don't blame them.
So now our dog is Nico Gordon Bombay McWiggin.
Does your dog have a drinking problem too, and then the need to coach youth hockey?
Yep.
Yeah, it's, I mean, the whole Albus, Severus, Potter, and it's like, really? What? I want to, at that point, I want to hear what Hermione's kids' names are. I want to hear what, you know, Ron's kids' names are. Did he name them after his brothers, you know?
I would assume, well, They bring up their kids' names in The Cursed Child, which I know a lot of people in the Harry Potter fandom actually really hate.
Isn't that the play?
Yeah. I was told not to read it. I have not even gotten into it because of so many people were like, if you love this franchise, this will ruin everything for you.
Is it actually a book too?
Yeah. Well, they have like a play script.
Oh, I thought it was, okay. I thought it was a play first.
It was a play. It's actually a two-part play. So you're able to go see part one of the show or part two of the show, or you can see part one, have a nice little break, and then go see part two.
And they're both like half the length of normal plays, and they just want to sell you two Broadway price tickets,
which means
probably have some weird Nazi allegory about why trans people are the devil too. I'm sure
you
worked that in there. JK.
I'm sorry again, Suzanne Collins, for accidentally mistaking you for J.K. Rowling.
Yeah, right. Taylor, you missed it. The first episode, Mike accidentally said it was Suzanne Collins. It was a horrible human being. But it was, in fact, J.K. Rowling.
Otherwise.
It was, in
fact. Wait. I forgot. No, Harry's first son's name is James Sirius Potter. So Sirius can't be the namesake for his second son.
Right, yeah, that's, yeah, I remember Cara mentioning.
Yeah, but imagine, like, having your brother's name, James Sirius Potter. Like,
yeah, at least normal, you
and then you're Albus Severus Potter.
Yeah.
Wait.
Who's your brother? My brother's Jim Potter. He's a real estate agent.
But
I'm Albus. Nice to meet you.
But Ross,
I'm
you'll love.
Girl that's going on 88, actually.
Right.
Ross, you'll love Harry's daughter, who's his youngest kid's middle name is Luna.
Hey, there we go. That's about time someone recognized her greatness. Yeah.
So instead of Lily Luna Potter, I would have went with Luna McGonagall Potter.
Or Luna Professor Liam Neeson Potter.
That's Harry's Albus Severus Potter, Liam Neeson Potter.
Liam Neeson Potter, that's all you need.
Has
yeah.
such a nice ring to it. No.
Exactly. It's so much better than Jim Potter. Now, what are we doing here? Jim Potter, yeah, he's a real estate agent in London. He's like a carpenter, or he's just some dude. It's like, you know, some indie folk rocker, you know, Jim Potter and the Potter Tones, you know?
So also with the, going back to the first movie with the Hermione wiping her parents' memories, there is a deleted scene where Harry, I think it was a deleted scene that was added on to the extended, where Harry goes back and warns the Dursleys. Was that in the regular movie too?
No, actually, yes, it was in the regular movie.
I wish it was only in the extended clip, because then if I watched the regular movie, I could imagine Harry just going like, should I go back and wipe their memories so that they don't get in trouble?
The first movie starts off with them like packing up their things, and his aunt is saying like, kind of like how hard it was, and she's like, you know, like I lost a sister too to them, like I know what they're capable of. Mm-hmm. And like that was him kind of understanding like they already did have an impact on, you know, his aunt and uncle regardless of everything.
Yeah, because we do get a brief look at the season finale or the series finale of Britain's favorite child abuse sitcom when they're finally packing up the house and leaving, And then Harry says goodbye to the house and his 14 friends that look like him. But and of course, yeah, we didn't even mention that. Of course, the dude named Mundungus that looks like a used car salesman is, of course, the traitor of the group. Who could have seen that coming? You
know? Wait, throughout the whole month of Harry Potter, we never brought up Potter puppet pals. Now, Ross, you might have not have heard of this, but I know Taylor has.
I'm gonna need an explanation.
It, since I think I was 8 years old, just the song of it has lived in my mind daily. You don't unhear it, like, ever. It's just there. It was like a ringtone in the back of your head.
It was like a stupid comedic animated thing for Harry Potter. And it one of them, like, was called the mysterious ticking noise. Yeah. And it's just Snape walks in and hears a ticking. And he's like, what is that mysterious ticking noise? And just starts singing his name. And then the entire cast shows up. And they start singing their names. And then suddenly it turns out the mysterious ticking noise was a pipe bomb that blows up and kills them all.
And then Voldemort comes in and starts singing his name. It's like, it was when YouTube first, like, got big and people really, like, oh, I can make videos on this platform. And you have some of those like iconic, like Charlie Bit Me type videos. It was kind of in that category that it had like millions of views for like a minute and a half of like pure stupidity and just absolute mindless activity going on.
And now all I can hear is Snape singing his name.
Hermione.
They just have Snape, Snape, Severus Snape. Ross no, is flabbergasted. Nice, this is a thing.
Ron Weasley.
And then you have Harry come up. He's just like, Harry Potter, Harry Potter.
Harry Potter, Harry Potter. Harry Potter. It's just like,
I have no idea what this is, but I really want you two to reenact
it. It's the most pointless video, but it's the catchiest thing I have ever heard.
Ross, you have to YouTube this after it. It'll get stuck in your head, and that'll bring me joy.
It's the mysterious ticking noise, the Potter Puppet Pals.
Potter Puppet Pals?
Yeah.
Okay, I will be looking this up. Oh, God, it's the first thing that pops up when you hit Potter in YouTube. Okay. All right. Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah. I can't wait to watch that. Interesting. This is creepy as hell.
Accelerating.
This is, wow. This is,
this is an creepy, exciting moment in your life, Ross.
I feel like it's a pivotal moment, at least.
And it will change your sanity because you will never stop hearing that noise ever again.
Yeah. At the very least, it will be pivotal. There is definitely going to be a change probably after I watch this. I will never be the same again, I bet.
If there's no happy hour films next week, you know what happened to Ross.
His mind.
I fell down a hole.
Potter Puppet Pals. He's currently in a mental institution shouting Harry Potter repeatedly.
Yeah, if anything, I probably should be there anyway. But that'll just be the final ticket. But anyway,
I'm glad we decided against watching the Fantastic Beast movies.
Yeah.
Never saw the Fantastic Beast movies?
I have, but I don't want to watch the second one again.
I mean, in one of these, we do get Grindelwald, right? Like,
yeah, he pops up in the first one. Movies.
But it's not Johnny Depp or whoever it's supposed
to be. Well, no, because Grindelwald's the same age as Dumbledore.
And he's what, sexy Dumbledore in that? It's Jude Law, right?
Well, yeah. In the second one, you get Jude Law as Dumbledore. And you get Johnny Depp as Grindelwald.
No, Johnny Depp's been removed from the movies now.
After
allegations. I thought he got reinstated.
I don't think, as of right now, I didn't hear he was reinstated. Because they were even going to do another Pirates movie after where the last one ended off. And they canceled that movie because they can't really do a movie without Jack Sparrow.
Well, isn't Amber Heard going to jail? Like, shouldn't that clear Johnny Depp's name?
I mean, I'm hoping something changes. I think there was a whole online petition, and last time I checked, it was like 40 million signatures about Disney re-signing Johnny Depp to Pirates of the Caribbean franchise.
There should be a petition to just end that franchise, you know?
Well, yeah, franchise should have ended after the first one, really.
There were rumors that they were going to reboot it with, like, Margot Robbie as, like, the lead or something like that, which fine, but do we?
Really, I can get behind that. I love Margot Robbie.
I know, but do we need that franchise to keep going?
Listen, I love those movies, but you know, I'd rather something end off as a high note. Like, okay, that ended. That was great. No regrets.
Look, I can get behind the first three, but once you get to 4 and 5, I'm like,
5 isn't terrible. But I think that was also me seeing Orlando Bloom back on the screen again, and my 12-year-old infatuation just came back, and I was like, wow.
The only reason I watched 5 is I love Javier Bardem.
Oh, yeah.
He's just wet and, like, missing his head in that movie. That's all it is. It's not even, like, No Country for Old Men, Javier, you know?
I know. I wish it was No Country for Old Men, Javier.
Dude, his haircut is like Snape's, you know? He could have fit in, too. He could have been, like, the Spanish import teacher, you know? He teaches Spanish wizardry at Hogwarts.
Again, if he was a Death Eater, if Javier Bardem was a Death Eater, shit would have gotten done, and Voldemort wins, and then Javier Bardem kills him with his, like, cow murdering thing.
Right, yeah, he makes him flip a coin. S for Scroogey.
Call it.
Call it, friendo. But, yeah, it's... So, after all of that, a bit of a... Now we've done a little bit of Pirates of the Caribbean talk on our Harry Potter episode, we can probably give our final thoughts on Harry Potter. Taylor, being the guest and super Harry Potter fan, why don't you give us a bit of a summary on what you feel about the franchise and whatnot?
Listen, even besides Deathly Hallows Part 1, and that leaves my personal opinion on Order of the Phoenix, it is by far the best of the sci-fi franchises. I think that it... I mean, even considering Star Wars' new 3 trilogy movies, I think it really just set the bar high as to how sci-fi movies should be. Even to this day, you're never going to find that kind of fandom again. I mean, I worked at a movie theater for 3 years throughout high school. I went to as many as I was old enough, their midnight showings, and I've never seen a crowd as I did Harry Potter's, lining up like 2 miles down the mall just to wait to get into this freaking movie hours later. They're great movies, they're great books. Regardless, they will always hold a special place in my heart. I love these movies to death, and it will take a lot for any other sci-fi franchise to meet up to them.
Yeah, that's a good summary of it. What about you, Mike?
I do really think that they kicked off the young adult movie, like book to movies thing strong, and I don't think any other franchise since has lived up to them. But if I was like going in gradings, I think the first three get an A for that grouping. Mm-hmm. The middle three get like a B to a B plus for that grouping. And the last two get like a B minus. I think the ending's good, but I think part one really drags it down. So, but I am partial to the earlier Harry Potter movies because I did like the whimsical magic to them that they sort of lost after. Now, I like 5 a lot better than Taylor does because I think you get the height of wizard dueling in 5 with the Dumbledore-Voldemort duel. I think that duel alone sets it above 6 and 7.
Yeah, it's... I'm inclined to agree. Yeah, the first couple movies, there very much is like, ooh, magical world, you know, wizards, kids, the ultimate evil. But, you know, you don't see... You get the hints of what the big threat is.
And that's what I think 3 is the perfect balance. The third movie is my perfect balance.
Yeah, and you get some backstory. You get a little bit of mythology. You get it all there. And then, of course, you get the starter inklings of Harry Potter as a cult leader but has no idea. And then at the very end, you know, it gets darker and darker and progresses darker and darker because it has to, because eventually Harry has to face the ultimate evil, yada, yada.
Eventually you get Professor Liam Neeson.
Yeah, Professor Liam Neeson in there. And, yeah, it eventually gets to, unfortunately, it's a little bit formulaic towards the end. And unfortunately, it's not responsible, obviously, for the MCU because the MCU had just started prior to in 2008. But everything in those movies, Avengers especially, which will come out the next year after Harry, after Deathly Hallows Part 2 ends, everything ends on the big world-ending battle and just colorful CGI is flying everywhere. And this movie, unfortunately, can get lumped into that looking back because we have so many MCU movies that do it. And you're like, well, Harry did it too, but it's wasn't technically the first, but it wasn't exactly, you know, new when it did it. But
that's what I think the big CGI battles, I would date back to like Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, but they were more of like, you know, the swords and, you know, the middle, like almost Middle Ages type fights. Mm-hmm. And then you get this, it's a good wizard battle, you know, movie. And it's really, it's a good franchise in and of itself, but in the sense that there's nothing really like it. You know, it's a great adaptation of a young adult novel series. It's unfortunately, it was the reason why we got so many other of the young adult franchises, Twilight being the worst of them, Hunger Games being middle of the road. And then you get your Divergence, which is like, just, well, this is another one we can make situation.
Same and had like Percy Jackson, which they just totally screwed up entirely.
Well, even that was like, how do we make another Harry Potter? Yeah. You know, that's what it was. And it's all on jumping on the coattails. And Harry Potter, you know, really did, you know, J.K. Rowling's horrible personalness, is like personality and her thoughts about things being, you know, being wrong about most things aside, she did grant she did write these books. They were made into pretty great movies with pretty great singular vision, you know, like style. So like they are a good franchise to watch. Personally, they're not what I would go to first, but I didn't, except for obviously part one of this Deathly Hallows, I didn't not enjoy watching them. You know, they're fun to watch, they're interesting. I'm not suddenly swept away with the need to read the books or anything like that, but I do acknowledge that these are obviously touchstone films in a lot of people's lives, and they're a great series of movies.
Even regardless of its popularity, and nothing ever like matching to that extent of a fandom or popularity, like even think to that, there's no other series that tried to produce like another, say, Wizarding World, Witchcraft World of this. Like, say, Hunger Games, Divergent, similar. You have Twilight, and then even, like, shows like The Vampire Diaries, True Blood, similar. Like, you have a bunch of these. Like, no one has ever tried to...
I would say a whole wizard. Percy Jackson is the closest to trying to replicate what...
But even that, it's less about, say, magic than wizarding. Like, Percy Jackson more so focuses on the whole ideology of, like, Greek gods
mythology
and mythology. It's divinity. Not so much, like... magical, I mean, it's magical powers, but in the sense of like what's granted to them by their parents, not like going to a wizarding school. And
I think that's the biggest comparison people draw, is Camp Half-Blood is,
yeah,
like Hogwarts is a lot more developed than Camp Half-Blood, but Camp Half-Blood is kind of Hogwarts.
Yeah,
I mean, even right there, Half-Blood, Mudblood, you know, they're using, yeah, similar terminology here, you know. And it's Percy Jackson and the Harry Potter and the, you know, it's the formulas of these books. And now you have the big success, so everybody has to copy it, you know. And
I mean, even that's different. Harry Potter finished every book, even split its second book into two halves. Percy Jackson couldn't even get past its second book.
They completely rewrote the first two books to make the movies, essentially. Like, they did, if you're looking at accuracy, I'd say Harry Potter hits at a solid 85% in terms, yeah, of book to movie. Percy Jackson was hitting at like 45% on accuracy to book.
No, I mean, the first movie wasn't like terrible. It wasn't like the most accurate, but it wasn't terrible. It was definitely entertaining.
They also cut out the main villain of the first book, like the, yeah, big fight Percy has, totally cut out the villain.
Yeah, it's, and that's, of course, you know, with this, you have your, pretty much everything about this franchise is, you know, designed and done, executed well. You know, you have your great, mm-hmm, performances from your great actors, you have great characters, and pretty much everybody is fleshed out and gets some sort of story arc. I mean, even you get the tiny little story arc of like Neville Longbottom eventually finding love with Luna Lovegood kind of situation, you know. It's,
even part one, despite being a bad movie from a story perspective, is made with competency. It's competent.
Yeah,
yeah, it just doesn't, it very much meanders because you had to have a feature length film, you know.
Yeah,
yeah,
you kind of have to shove some bunches like crap in there. And Yates at some point was probably like, wait, let's do Frodo, let's do that with the ring. But that's a 2-hour movie we can jam in here, why not? But it's, either way, you know, we have a almost $8 billion franchise that came out of this. And it's wildly successful, has spun off into two lesser movies and a lesser franchise, but it's got a play. It's got Pottermore. It's got
a Wizarding World of Harry Potter.
It's got even a London attraction. You can go into a Hogwarts replica. Right.
And even Times Square, it's not in Manhattan. They're opening up a huge Harry Potter store.
That's right.
Street in Boston, I discovered. I was out there with my dad. I think it was like same thing, like a monthish ago. We wandered into this store and it's just a giant Harry Potter store in there. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. You have stuff like that. Like it's really, but even that, it's something, whether someone's watched it in full length or not, like you say Harry Potter, you mentioned certain details of it, people know what you're talking
about.
It's
a cultural phenomenon for sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's I'm sure Daniel Radcliffe, because he's going to probably have the most diverse career afterwards. Emma Watson kind of got pigeonholed into doing, you know, I don't want to say pretty girl projects, but like she didn't do much. I mean, she was Belle for Christ's sake in the live action Beauty and the Beast. Like,
and she couldn't really sing.
Yeah, but Radcliffe, on the other hand, has done everything from that Horns Joe Hill book adaptation.
My personal favorite is him playing a dead guy.
and that with Dano, right? It's Paul Dano on that.
Yeah, Swiss Army Man.
Yeah, and then he's doing like Guns Akimbo, like little shit like that.
And Woman in Black, he went to Broadway and did Keenan in Business.
Yeah, and then he didn't have to do any of that because he's making bank off then, of playing one character.
And then just dropped off the face of the earth.
No, he bought an ice cream truck and gives away ice cream. Right, he
apparently bought an ice cream truck.
Yeah. And then he started an Ed Sheeran music video.
Yeah, there you go. The height of British of acting.
I'd like to believe Rupert Grint and Ed Sheeran are just best friends solely because they're ginger.
Probably, 100%. Yeah.
They have said that they specifically met because of how many times they have received comparisons of each other. And so they decided to meet up. Ed Sheeran's like, hey, play me in my own music video. And they became friends solely for that person.
I want to believe that there's like a UK ginger club led by Conor McGregor.
Yeah.
Could be. But so that's been Harry Potter month. And Taylor, really appreciate you coming on. It's been fun.
Thank you for having me on. This is awesome. I had such a great time.
Yeah. If you have any other specific franchises or movies or whatever you want to talk about, we gladly have you back. It's been a good time.
Been a fun
big
one.
Franchise girl, big horror movie girl, big Disney girl. No,
you already did Disney. Yeah, we did 4 hours worth of Disney, so we're probably going to take a break from Disney for a while.
That's our longest episode, our single longest episode.
People are still mad at us for that. We still get hate mail, but
nice.
Yeah, so again, we got another month of October coming up, horror movies and all that, but we'll find a way to get you back.
I watch all movies all the time. It's my biggest hobby, so
nice.
Always here to talk, always around.
Dude, that's awesome. Let's do it, but. Mike, in the meantime, before Taylor comes back next time, where can people find us on the internet?
All right, so for streaming, we are on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, as well as Overcast and a ton of other resources because of Anchor. You find us at Happy Hour Films Podcast. We are also on Instagram and Facebook at Happy Hour Films Podcast. Give us a like, give us a follow, shoot us a message. We'd like to hear from you guys.
Yep. And since we're done Harry Potter month, we have to come up with something obviously to do next. And we realized that next week, or when the next episode gets released in 2 weeks, it'll basically be our 1 year anniversary of doing this. So we're going to revisit the man that started it all. So we're going to revisit Matt Damon, and we're going to discuss his many cameos that he's made throughout his career. And we're going to, dive a little bit deep into those just to talk about the man who got us going on this little
who has played Loki in two different franchises.
That's right. Yeah.
Two different cinematic universes.
That's right. So we'll be doing that. And then we'll probably be discussing some blockbusters is what we're going to be talking about.
Summer blockbusters.
So
a lot of Spielberg coming your way.
That's right. Taylor, once again, thank you very much for coming on.
Of course.
Awesome. And till we see you next time, as always, I have been Ross Bacon.
I've been Mike McGuigan.
and we'll see you guys next time. So long.